God understands the importance of moments. God understands the power of memories. And there are some things God does so that you will define your relationship with him on the basis of a memory. He told Moses, he says, I'm going to bring the children of Israel out of Egypt. I'm going to cause the death angel to pass over by night. I want you to put blood on the doorpost and on the lintel. And he said, when the death angel passes over, when he sees the blood, he will pass over you. And that one moment became a point of reference for the next 1,000 years. God referred to, am I not the God who brought you out of the wilderness? Am I not the God who brought you out of Egypt? Am I not the God who delivered you from the hand of Pharaoh? That one moment was done so that they would have a memory, so that whatever they faced, the Hittites, the Jebusites, the Philistines, whatever they came into, they would remember that moment and use that moment as a point of reference to build their faith up, to strengthen their faith, to define their relationship with God, and say, if God can do that, he can do this too. In the New Testament, on the night before Jesus was to be offered up, he had a Passover dinner with the disciples, and he brought them together, and he took it, and he changed the meaning of the Passover to what we call communion. He took the bread, and he broke it, and he blessed it, and he gave it to them and told them to eat. And he said, this do what? Say it again. Say it again. This do in remembrance of me. And so as often as you do this, you do show forth the Lord's death till he comes. He is replacing the blood of the lamb with the blood of Jesus. He says, I'm going to give you a new memory, a new reflection, a new way of identifying yourself. And as often as you do this, you let me know I still remember. I still remember. I hate it when people forget. I hate it when they forget. I'm not talking about forget where you put your watch or forget where you parked your car. I'm talking about forget when I've been good to you. I mean, forget when I helped you out of trouble. I don't mind being betrayed, but I hate being betrayed by people I was good to. It just gets on my nerves to think, how did you forget? Am I not the same person that you called at 2 o'clock in the morning and you were in trouble and you gonna dog me et tu, Brute? You too? People forget. They forget and they walk away from you and fail to remember the things that matter the most in life. In our text tonight, this is probably the bloodiest Psalms of all 150 divisions of Psalms. It is bloody because he openly and adamantly hopes God kills the Edomites and prays that he kills their children and everybody. It is naked, it is honest, it is, as young people say, keeping it 100. He doesn't try to impress us with being deeply spiritual. His emotions are all over the place. In the course of 9 verses, he's spiritual one moment, he's remorseful the next moment, he's angry the next moment, all incorporated in 9 verses of the 137th division of Psalms. And in order to appreciate the magnitude of what is going here, what is happening here, you must understand that he has left Jerusalem on the run. His home has been besieged by the Babylonians and the Edomites. The 9 tribes have been lost, and the remnant has escaped, and only a few have stayed in Jerusalem. They have been beaten, fiercely beaten. Not beaten like you got a whipping. I mean beaten like you're a dog, like you're an animal. They had been beaten until they were bloody and battered and tattered and torn. The women had their clothes yanked off of them and raped, denied of any dignity are able to resist. The women had been raped, and the men who resisted were castrated and with blood running down their legs and chains wrapped around their ankles. In the hot Palestinian heat, they dragged them away, defeated, out of their own country and their own land and their own customs, away from Jerusalem. Oh, Jerusalem. Away from the place that they woke up in the morning to the smell of baking bread and could hear the cobbler as he began to get out his hammers and prepare to make his shoes. The coppersmiths and the sound of the coppersmiths early in the morning, and the women singing down at the rivers as they washed their clothes, singing the Hebrew songs, dancing on the riverbanks. Jerusalem. There was no place like Jerusalem. But now it lay in ruins. There is no hammering. There is no nailing. There is no bread being baked. Instead, the smell of fresh baked bread has been replaced with the stench of burning flesh. The screams and the anxieties of Hebrew boys and girls who are killed like you would kill a roach. The men have been castrated, and the women have been humiliated, and they are dragged away from Jerusalem, the holy city of Jerusalem that not only defines their culture, it defines their faith, it defines everything about them. Who would have ever thought that Jerusalem could be lost? It was lost to them. Only a few remained. The rest were drug away. And it was a bitter moment. It was a painful, crushing moment, because when they were drug away, they never knew for sure, Cammie, whether they would ever get back to Jerusalem again. Because there are some things when you lose them, you can't be sure you'll ever get them back. That's why you have to take care of things when you have them. Because you have no guarantee that if you lose them, you will ever get them back again. And I can see the young, handsome Hebrew boys with hair flowing down their back and blood running down their legs and sweat crossing down their brow, looking back at Jerusalem on fire. Trying to get it etched in their mind so that they would never forget Jerusalem. Jerusalem, the place of Solomon's temple. The beautiful, majestic Solomon's temple. You remember the one that when the temple was finished built, the Shekinah glory sat down on the temple and the priests lay prostrate in the floor. And it was so amazing that Solomon had asked, what would happen if you change your mind and shut up the heavens and there be no more rain? And God said, if my people who are called by my name shall humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked way, then will I hear from heaven and forgive their sins and heal their land. They weren't supposed to lose Jerusalem. The worst that should have ever happened is that they messed up and had to repent. And now they have lost Jerusalem. They have lost what defines them, what gives them distinction. What sets them apart? Do you not know the enemy wants you to lose what makes you distinctive? Your integrity, your honor, your class, your personality, your disposition, the uniqueness of you. There is never ever going to be another you. 200 years from now, nobody will have your fingerprint. Nobody will have your voice pattern. You are one of a kind. There has never been one before you, and there will never be one after you. And yet the enemy wants to destroy what makes you unique, or make you so envious of other people that you give up on being you and trade and a designer's original for a cheap copy of something you saw. You must realize there'll never be another you. They realize there would never be another Jerusalem. And they defined themselves by Jerusalem, and it was gone. And in spite of the pain, I don't think I would like to take a walk if I was castrated. It just doesn't sound, I've never been castrated, but it doesn't sound like something a guy would want to do with blood running down his legs. And yet they walked 540 miles on foot, bleeding and hurting and suffering, to nothing chord, no music, just the sound of the rattling of chains around their ankles. And those who were known for their liberty had become captive. And they were captive, and they were bound. And when we step into our text, we step into the text of people who have carried their bloody, beaten body away from the holy city of Jerusalem and found themselves in a strange place called Babylon. Brothers and sisters, ladies and gentlemen, we find ourselves in a strange place today. We find ourselves in a place that we have never been in before. I have seen a lot of things happen in my life. I remember the I Have a Dream speech when Dr. King spoke. I remember the day that they shot him in the motel in Memphis. I remember it. I was a young boy, but I still remember it. I remember his funeral and the wood-drawn, horse-drawn carriage that they put his body. I still remember Mahalia Jackson singing, "Move on up a little higher," at the funeral. I remember it like it was yesterday. I remember the Vietnam War. I remember the Vietnam War, and I remember the hippies, and I remember a lot of things, and I remember when John Kennedy was killed right down here in Dallas, and I remember when Bobby Kennedy was destroyed, and I remember when we were lied to about Vietnam, and I remember Watergate and the scandal and Nixon, and I remember the civil rights, and I remember the Pettus Bridge, and I remember when they carried the charred bodies of black little girls out of a church service, and Emmett Till and Medgar Evers. I remember all of that. I've seen all of that in the span of my life, but I have never seen a time like this. I have never seen a time where churches were closed down and those who dared to come were masked like they were getting ready to rob a bank. And I have never seen a time that you had to pray about whether it was safe to go to the grocery store. And I have never seen a time that people were taking your temperature before you walked into a mall. And I have never seen a time that hundreds and thousands of people are dead from an invisible disease that you can't tell whether you're walking into it or not. I have never seen a time like this. And so when my brother sits by the rivers of Babylon, I sit there with him. I sit there with him because he has never seen Babylon. And I have never seen this. And the Bible said that he sat down by the rivers of Babylon and he wept. And when I studied the rivers of Babylon, it is in all likelihood not so much a river but a canal that was built from the rivers, because the Babylonians irrigated their crops by building canals that caused water to flow so that they didn't have to carry water so far in order to water their crops. And this man-made river is accentuated by man-caused tears. And as the tears run down his face, the rivers flow until you cannot tell one from the other. We sat by the rivers of Babylon. We sat by the rivers of Babylon and we wept. We wept not because of the pain in our bodies or the laceration in our flesh or the discomfort of the chains around our ankles. We wept when we remembered what we lost. Oh, what we lost. I come in here every Sunday and preach, and it really doesn't bother me to preach in an empty building. It didn't bother me. It didn't upset me because it put me in a war mode. And when I get in a war mode, fighting becomes the optimum drug. And all I'm going to do is fight. And I'm going to fight whether anybody's sitting there or not to let the devil know, you ain't going to take me out like this. I'll fight you if don't nobody come. I'll preach in a room by myself. It didn't bother me to see the empty room. But the other night on New Year's Eve, when they showed the room full, and the balcony was loaded, and the choir stand was jumping, and the music was everywhere, and the traffic was backed up, I looked at it, and tears welled up in my eyes because I remembered what normal looks like. I remember what we had lost. I remembered it. I remember the thunderous sound that I'm used to hearing on Sunday morning when thousands of people break out in spontaneous praise and the aisle is filled with dancing. And it's funny, the emptiness didn't hurt like the memory of the full. It was all I could do to fight back the tears, Pastor. When I remembered what was.